Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry to be a little bit late. We had a work session. It ran over a little bit. We're glad to see everyone here. Appreciate you being here with us this evening for our council meeting on March 24th, 2014. And as usual, if as an agenda item comes up that you'd like to speak to, you certainly may do so. Just raise your hand and we'll call on you at the appropriate time. And we will continue by the council prayer and then pledge of allegiance to our flag.
Before we say a prayer, Mr. Mayor, I just want to say that I was not present at the last meeting because of my husband who suffered a heart attack the days before the meeting. But I just want to personally express those who had phone calls and emails and flowers and some special contact with my husband, how special that meant to him. We go about our busy schedules not realizing that things can happen in seconds that can be life-changing. And so we are, to this day, we've always been grateful, but we're especially grateful for what God has brought in our lives with his personal recovery and the way things are going. We have friends that are suffering with similar concerns, and they're special to us, so we say a special prayer for them tonight. And if you will, as we begin, for those of you who want to engage in bowing your heads in prayer, please join me in doing that. Lord God, we have been incredibly blessed in so many ways. Once again, dear Father, we stand in these chambers just to say thank you, and we don't say thank you lightly. We thank you for life, and we thank you for the strength you bring to us. We thank you for our families and our friends, and this city and the city leadership, and the many, many volunteers who knock on our doors, who come to our offices to give up their time and talent to this city. Dear God, we realize you are the entrusted leader over all of us. Use us for your purpose and not our selfish desires. Grow our wisdom, our vision with wisdom, and order our steps as we carve out plans for our water rates for the discussion tonight, the increases that we're going to discuss probably at length, the cleaning up of our city with debris, the potential of more unemployment in Savannah Riverside, and the many challenges that we face within the city. For you said that if we put you at the center of everything and be obedient and not be influenced by worldly wisdom, then all things are possible. Help us, dear God, as we grow impatient with the process of things, which sometimes look like more of a disaster than a success. Give us the wisdom to see through things that are not there. We promise you, dear Father, that in all that we do, we will give you the honor and the praise and the glory. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item of business this evening are the minutes, to review the minutes, the consideration of the minutes from the work session and regular meeting of March 10th, 2014. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
I so move.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. And rule business. First item, approval of appointments and discussion of appointees to various city boards, commissions, and committees. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. Councilmember Diggs recommended the appointment of Mike Gibbons to the Accommodations Tax Committee, and he would replace Todd Lista, who resigned from the committee. That term would last until March 25th, 2016. So for council consideration tonight is the appointment of Mike Gibbons to the Accommodations Tax Committee.
Okay, so thank you. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item two is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to adjust water and sewer rates. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. The title of the ordinance for consideration by council tonight is an ordinance establishing new charges for water and sewer service. This ordinance goes all the way back to a discussion we had at the Horizons meeting, as well as budget discussions we've had for several years. Those discussions have talked about the need for considering inflationary pressures and their effect on our budget. That was certainly something that we looked at the last time we visited the water rates. In the meantime, we are seeing that a 10.5% shortfall is very possible before the June 30th end of our fiscal year this year in our water fund. Water and sewer revenues are not meeting their projections, and the increase that we have proposed, the water sewer rate adjustment, is something that will help us in our capital program and capital needs to keep our system modern. You know, our water and sewer system is something that's expected to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And in particular, we've had a consent order with DHEC, and we are required to install a filtration system at our Shiloh water facility out on the north side of town. We also have the water plant that we're constructing on Silver Bluff Road, which is new technology. That was something we studied for several years, had a consultant involved, bid that project out, and it's now under construction. Is going to help us provide water now, better water service, and also help us with our new customers that are going to sign on to our water utility system. And Mayor, as you pointed out so many times, you know, our population continues to grow in Aiken. It does not go down. It continues to grow. And one thing council has been very supportive over the years with our utility system is to make sure we make the proper investments at the proper time to ensure we maintain as modern a facility as possible. In front of me tonight are the new water meters that we have to install, several thousand of them over a three-year period. We're in the process of installing these units. They're significant in that they don't have moving parts in them. They have ability to measure the water flow. They don't have moving parts that would wear out over time. And with our existing system, we do have an impeller system, and that is something that spins so it has the opportunity to wear out over time and not be as accurate over time, as well as a battery. We were one of the first systems in our area and in the state, for that matter, to have a remote metering of the usage of customers' service at the at their residence or business. And that eliminated the need of having meter readers who would have to physically flip up a lid and take a reading and write that down. That is all done over remotely now, wirelessly, and we've had several cities who have studied that system. We worked with Badger and have a system in place now we think will be very accurate. And again, what we're trying to do is make necessary replacements so that customers of our water utility pay for the water they use and not one penny more. With this particular investment, the dollar a week that we're asking the typical water customer to spend, the dollar extra a week, helps us purchase this equipment and helps us make sure that we have money in place when the bills that come due for modernizing our system come in the mail. So for council consideration tonight is this water and sewer rate adjustment. As discussed at the first reading, there were seven factors that we listed and that are included in the ordinance that's under consideration tonight. You'll find that at page 97. Of your agenda packet. We also have materials with us tonight, and I believe you have that, Ms. Abdi. It's the 30 other water systems that we take a look at, and their rates, even with this proposed rate adjustment, will be the fifth lowest amongst those 30, and that's for similarly sized utility systems, similar populations. The specific items that we have listed, and I believe, Mr. Ebner, you requested that we incorporate that in the ordinance, was to pay for the Silver Bluff water plant construction, fund water meter replacements over a three-year period, fund the city share of the Shiloh Springs filter installation project mandated by a consent order, fund the city's depreciation account to have funds we know we need to replace aging system infrastructure equipment, fund a multi-year comprehensive installation of generators to operate our water and sewer systems, including staffing levels for water and sewer system work and maintenance crews, establish a rate that is more consistent with the cost expected to operate our water and sewer systems, including staffing levels for water and sewer system work and maintenance crews, and to keep rates adjusted to cover inflationary impacts upon labor and material costs. Everything that we're seeing in our publications is predicted between 1.7% and 2.4% would be the inflation factor that our utility system would set. So that's for consideration for council tonight, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pierce. Would council like to suspend the rules so that we can discuss this, or would you want to take a vote, at least get a motion in the second, and then discuss?
I think we can do the motion in second because there's going to be a lot of discussion.
Okay.
I'll move the ordinance as stated.
Okay, sir. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Oh. All right. Okay. Any discussion to start with? I know we have some folks, well, I don't know, but I assume greatly that we have some folks that would like to talk about this.
I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
With regard to the seven items that are added, item number four says fund our system depreciation account. Now, it doesn't mention the amount. Should it mention the amount of $1.2 million, which is what we have always considered as fully funding our depreciation account?
And again, Mr. Dwyer, we do that in the budget process, but it's whatever council would like.
With all due respect, I understand, but the budget process doesn't seem to be working because we find out that, I mean, we haven't fully funded depreciation since 2008. I mean, it's been short. In a couple of years, it was zero. Mm-hmm. And this year, it's, I don't know what the number was, 580, 380, something like that. 580, 580. What I'm looking for somehow is a mechanism to force us into fiscal responsibility. So, in other words, we say that we're going to fund that 1.6, and then we charge staff with telling us if it's not going to, if for any reason it can't happen. I mean, there are reasons it can't happen, but I hate to find out this late in the year to the point where we have to make a 10% increase. So that's what I'm looking for.
Well, if I can address that concern, we actually do come to council every August to talk about the resolution of the budget and reconciliation of the expenditures made to get our numbers confirmed so the audit can proceed. And when the depreciation was not funded, that was by my predecessor, council actually received that information at the time. We also came to you 2 years ago when we funded a little over $1 million, and then in August of last year when we talked about the $560,000 that was funded. Again, if we fund the depreciation account, we have a target amount in the budget, but if we have some sort of emergency, like we had a utility system break up at the McDonald's restaurant on number one, we have to find a way to fund that. And if we have a mandated amount, and again, the budget is the plan for funding the depreciation account, if we hit an emergency, you know, that might be a consideration that we have to make. Again, it helps us if it's in the budget process, if it's in this ordinance.
I understand what you're saying.
It could paint us into a corner where we could not handle an emergency situation.
Well, I mean, a budget's supposed to paint us into a corner. That's the idea. That's how you end up with a balanced budget. But with regard to your comment about depreciation, your predecessor, 2007 and 8, it was funded $1.2 million. In 9 and 10, it was zero.
Right.
In 11, it was $1,050,000. In 12, it was $1,080,000. And this year, last year, $580,000. So when we get to August, it's way too late. I mean, that's the end of the budget year. We have already made a decision. You made a decision, and I'm not critical of it, but you made a decision that you had to make, that you had to use the depreciation money for something that broke. I mean, you're right, we can't predict when we're going to have a breakage, but just council isn't told of that until, under the current system, we're not told about that till August.
We actually come to you when we have these emergency repairs. We have come to council.
To say that we can't fund the depreciation?
No, to say we have to fund the emergency that's occurred.
I don't...
Because it's not a budgeted item, Mr. Dewar, so we come, anytime it's over $25,000 by the budget ordinance, we have to come with an ordinance to council.
I know that. I seem to recall us coming forward and asking for an advancement out of capital projects 3 money, but...
We came to you when the McDonald's sewer line collapsed.
Did we?
Yes, sir. We sure did.
Well, how is the depreciation amount calculated? Is it some arbitrary number? Is it a percentage of something? Or is it a number times something? How do we come up with a...
It's an amount that we set, Mr. Mary, based on the capital projects that Mr. Gritton talked about at Horizons. Mm-hmm. It's for debt service for the construction of the water plant, and it's also for the water meters and it's the filtration system that we are required by court order to put in.
But I mean, just from Mr. Dewar's comments, it sounds like it's been the same number for $1.2 million for 4 or 5 years.
So it has been the same number, that's right.
But how did that number come be, and how is it always exactly the same?
Well, again, it's been based on the debt service that the utility system has had to bear, as well as the projects that we want to build. We try to plan so that when we have a need, we can pay for the need, and that's why that amount's put back.
It also serves as our flywheel for ups and downs with our income. It's the emergency fund or surge fund. If we don't have enough money to fund everything, we just don't fund all of that.
Right.
And the way we do our rates, we base everything on how much water we sell versus having a base rate that pays for the operation of the systems.
I understand all that. I was just wondering how we came up with that $1.2 million. I mean, I know how it's been used and how it's been funded or not funded. I was just wondering where that number came from.
Well, and again, what we try to do with the depreciation accounts, as we've talked about before, we know the assets we have, we know the life expectancy for that asset, and we try to put money back so that when needed improvements are needed, we have the funds to go ahead and do that work.
We show here where we receive, if we get this rate increases approved, that we project to receive $8,108,880 in revenue for am I not reading that right?
What page are you on, Mr.
I am on page number 103. Too high.
That's
7.6.
Yes, 7.6 is right.
So yes, we're gonna receive $7,692,113. What I don't see is what does it cost us for that money that we sell?
Well, there'll be different cost levels. It depends on the water source. We looked at that when we were looking at the opportunity to purchase water rights. The most efficient system we have, of course, are the deep water wells. They're the best value for us because the water comes out of the ground typically pure. We have to add chemicals per DHEC regulations in order to distribute it through the system. The Shiloh probably comes in next since it's a spring source, and then the most expensive would be Shaw's Creek.
Do we have a number for how much? I mean, we have the 2013 number. For example, it was $7,644,200-something-or-other. I can't see the number in my handout. In the cost of water, because it's well water, is the cost simply the electrical cost to pump it and the cost of chemicals? I mean, do we know how much it costs us to get that $7.6 million revenue?
Yes, sir. It's $7,644,200. That's the number. That zero got cut off.
Okay.
There are a lot of costs. You know, you have your labor cost. You have benefits for the labor. You have equipment. It is the chemical, certainly. It is the electrical cost. And so the items in the budget, you know, we predict revenue, and that's how we base our expenditures, is based on the revenue.
This was last budget year, and we've, mm-hmm. we've gone through the reconciliation. So do we know, is that number available, of how much we had to spend to get the 7644 number?
I mean, yes, sir. That is in the budget reconciliation. It's in the audit report. It's in the CAFR information we provide. It's in the information we provided at Horizons. Again, I didn't know if you wanted that tonight. I mean, I can get that. I don't have it with me.
The reason I ask is because we're talking about this budget increase that's going to get us $7.6 million next year, if I read it right, 7692113. And then we're talking, because we're going to get this increase, we're going to do these seven things. And I'm just wondering, are those seven things platitudes? Are we really going to have a chance to do those? I mean, you got on page 110, you got how much money we're going to do for the water meters, where is that at?
It's actually $3.6 million.
Yeah, but I'm looking for it. Yeah, $600,000 last year, which we didn't spend, I think.
That's actually for this budget year that ends June 30th.
Yeah, but we won't spend that. Or will we?
Mr. Grinton could tell to you about his spending schedule. He's here.
But then he's projecting $1 million for the next 3 years for the water meters. And that, I guess my point is, do we need the seven items in the ordinance, because they're all just nebulous statements that don't have any numbers attached to them, and I wonder if it's a meaningful thing to do or a waste of time.
Well, certainly we included it in the ordinance, but because council was of a sentiment that we should include it to show how we could tie the rate increase to make sure that the money goes towards the projects that the rate increase, was put in.
Yeah, but I don't think we're getting enough money to do that.
If you recall, I had asked to put numbers and dates and stuff in there, and the city attorney said we really shouldn't do that.
Right, so we put the...
So we put them in. If we put them in, because if you want to go back in history, in my 4.5 years on council, I voted for 3 increases, and every year we paid for the meters, but we didn't do it. And so the purpose of getting at least this in here, when we come to this same discussion, we can go back and say, hey, we really discussed that. Because if you go back to 2012, one of the items says to fund one-third of the water meters in 2012, and we haven't done that yet, but we supposedly put the money. So the numbers...
You talk about the 8% increase?
Yeah.
Actually, in 2012, the 8% increase, 2% was committed to inflationary pressures. The other 6% was for us to hire 3 crews of 2 members each to replace water lines, which we had the defective water lines, and we're triaging the water leaks. That was killing us with the water leaks.
Mr. Morris put 6 items in there, and that was one of them. One was funding the water meters, one was paying Shiloh Springs and the radium, and the other one was the payoff part of the debt. And my whole object is here that when we come to next year, Mr. Pierce and I don't have that discussion what was in the one last time, but that was it wasn't in the ordinance before.
Exactly.
And even hiring the people was not in the ordinance.
It was the discussion that we had.
It was the discussion, but it wasn't in the ordinance.
You're absolutely right, but it was the discussion we had.
Okay, and we agreed to do that to help us. Mm-hmm. So next year, I'm going to try to get numbers put in here and see what the city attorney tells me I can and can't do.
Maybe we can beat Mr. Smith in submission by that time, Mr. Evans.
Well, I'm working on him.
But this still doesn't say you're going to spend $1 million next year on water heaters.
Huh? If you, they run in, how much does a meter cost us to put in, George?
It costs us either $215 or about $270. Some meter systems have backflow prevention devices, and they have to be replaced at the same time. So if one does not have one, you don't have to have that extra expense, which is like another $56, $7.
And I think if you do it in 3 years, it's roughly $5,000 a year, somewhere between $4,000 and
$5,000. It's right at $76 a week is what I'm calculating needs to be put in between the finance meter technicians and the utilities meter technicians.
Now to get you to about $1,900,000 to $1,100,000 a year if he makes his 4,000 to 5,000 meters.
Yeah. I have a question, Mr. Mayor. To Mr. Pierce, the water and sewer that was on the ballot, infrastructure, can we use the meter funds from that, the capital sales tax, to pay for the meters?
Mm-mm. It's supposed to be 40 years or older.
Mr. Pierce.
He can answer it, but I'll like to hear his answer.
Well, of course, the funny thing is I'm going to give you Reggie's answer.
Okay.
Because the capital list, you know, we had several discussions about the projects, and that's why George has developed the list, and we have a timeline. So we've already had a discussion that Horizons, and I think it's a little over $8 million water and sewer total.
Mm-hmm.
We just arbitrarily split that half and half. But George has very specific issues because it's for infrastructure, which is actually sewer lines, water lines.
Right. That's where the money for Crossland Park, for example, came from,
right.
and that's replacing the infrastructure.
And those were the projects that we actually listed when we had the capital project sales tax discussions. I mean, we actually had the idea of where the money would go, the SSES survey, and so forth. So really, we've earmarked that money already.
Okay.
But it also, Ms. Price, specifically, I was on council then, and we put that money for 40 years or older so that it wouldn't get used for, if you will, changing out the meters, which is a maintenance issue. But it can be used, like the water wells that are 40 years older, and Mr. Grant has on the list to fix. That would be used to fix our water wells and replace lines all across the city.
I was told by another source that it could. My second question deals with the timing of this. Normally we make this timing with our water rate increase that aligns with our budget. But I recognize that Kim wants this to get some money in the bank early. Otherwise we won't be able to pay our bills, and we are still hurting at the very end to pay our bills.
We are.
Even with this increase.
We are.
And what puzzles me greatly is that we tend to do things on an emergency basis. And I recognize the word of being conservative, but our taxpayers should not have to deal with a 10% increase if it passes this year, and then next year possibly the same predicament. Our lowest water rates, and based on what Kim has said and based on what the minister has already been discussed, our water use is March, April, May, and then the end of the year in the winter months. But we want to increase these folks right now, as a matter of fact, from March, April, May, and they're not watering their yard, but we need the revenue to get the money in the bank. That concerns me, and I think that our citizens are asking more from us in terms of planning. I don't think they object so much with the increase, but rather we do things without planning properly for these increases. That is what I'm hearing. And I've been told by the voters I have no problems if this is needed, but you all need to plan more appropriately.
And I think that's a fair comment from the voters, Ms. Price, and I appreciate you sharing that. Again, by the average water customer spending a dollar or more a week with us, we can make sure that we have this infrastructure. So they're actually purchasing equipment for the system versus the infrastructure of the system. It's the equipment that's part of it. And that's why we've tied it to that, and that is in the ordinance, so we all know why we were here. We know we're going to continue to have inflationary pressures. And again, we'll continue to look at this situation and you know, plan as best we can. This particular year, when we got to December, and we knew that we had the collections from June, July, August, September, and even October, we knew that we were, looking forward, we knew we were coming up short. So we tried to act as quickly as we could. We figured that out by the end of December, and we came to you end of January at Horizons to talk about this need. And, of course, the council's asked some very good questions. That's why we've gone back to the drawing board. George and his crew, I want to publicly commend him, have found some great ways to economize and do work in-house that we've mentioned before to try and find savings for the taxpayers. The fact of the matter is we have infrastructure that is aging out that we have got to replace to accurately measure usage. We have to have the south side plant. We did that study. We had a lot of discussion about that. That's underway. And we've got a consent order with DHEC on the Shiloh Springs, so we have to put that filtration system in place.
All of that's true, Mr. City Manager, but it's been true for the last several years.
Well, the thing about the Shiloh filter treatment, though, Mr. DeWar, is we went to the state and got a forgivable loan for $1 million. So we saved our water customer $1 million by getting that state grant.
That's great.
But that's an increase we don't have to ask for. So I just want to share with the public present and the rest of council, you know, we do try. The last thing in the world I want to do is come to this desk and tell you we got to raise taxes or raise fees or raise revenue in the utility account. But the plain fact is to have that clean water available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and through the winter storm packs, we have got to make this investment to keep the system up to date.
I understand that. I'm just going back to Councilwoman Price's comment about the planning, because a lot of these things, well, we've known about it. Now, George, if we take and look at the water revenue in November and December, should we be doing it then as opposed to waiting until February and then putting the increase in April?
Well, we've tried to put things together for Horizons being an opportunity, but you know, we can look at revenues constantly, and we do look at revenues constantly. It's a question of just, you know, when do you recognize a trend?
I mean, sure. money.
We bill in arrears, so we run 30 to 45 days lag time. That's why you see us November, December time frame doing that assessment, because then we have the receipts through October. And as I recall, Kim, from your presentation at Horizons, those key months are July, August, September, October, as far as how you prognosticate and look in the future to, you know, plan what you anticipate revenues to be.
Well, my impression is it's almost like people consider that chart showing us that we're the second lowest water rates in the state as more important than actually going ahead and planning forward. And in 2010, I believe, when we raised it, when was the last time the water rates were raised before that? I believe it was
2012.
It's in your package. You've got the whole list.
You want to know this?
Well, but basically what I'm saying is we've been very averse to raising the rates going along. And all of a sudden now, you know, we're stuck. We have to make a pretty healthy raise because, you know,
no, the three discussions I've had while you and I have been on council have been after the fact. And I think what has happened is that we just kind of blink our eyes the in-between year and say, well, we'll make it another year, and we haven't made it another year yet. Yeah. And that was happening in the past. But as we go back, and maybe some of the citizens here tonight have been tracking this for years, and we've got to do it every year and be serious about it.
That's my point. I think you know, we're suffering for what happened, you know, in the past, if you will.
The question's been asked, Mr. Mayor, if I might ask, whether we can expect another rate increase next year. Mm-hmm. And my response has been, we don't know that. Mm-hmm. But certainly we ought to be able to tell our voters that we can expect, given the water, and citizens do not like the fact that we're gauging increases on whether they use more water or not. The more water they use, they're penalized for a rate increase, but that's just a fact of life. If they get, if there's less water use, then they have to pay the penalty for that. They do not like that kind of dependency on whether water rates go up or not, but that's how we base that expenditure and expenses decision upon.
And again, that if that's the sentiment, we can look at the base rate that Mr. Ebner was talking about before, knowing that we have to run a system and that we have to cover our overhead, if you will. Mm-hmm. But that would entail a base rate adjustment. Again, this is a learning experience for all of us. We had the wettest summer we ever had that I know of, and again, it's an unexpected event. But it's not just a particular thing. It's not just the rainfall from summer. It's inflationary pressures that we've talked about. It's the infrastructure that we know we need to replace.
I know it's chemicals and all those kinds of things, but
the chemical prices have actually been fairly stable, but, you know, the cost of labor is more. It's one of those things where we have a system and we need to run it. Everybody wants a quality system, and actually it's in the issues memo that I put in the packet today. George and his group have won a state award for the fluoridation of the water supply, and it's a model for the rest of the state. So, you know, we're trying to find opportunities to economize as we can. The plain fact is we've got to run a system, and we do have costs associated with running.
George, let me just say to you, and I've just said a great prayer, I thought, from my heart. Do not take this as any indictment upon our city staff. We all know you're doing a good job. It is up to us as a city council body to help to do better planning. We want this to continue to be a great city. But it's up to us to help you and all department heads and all of our staff to make sure that it's a great city. And that is to helping with better planning. We're part of that planning as a body.
Right.
So please don't take that as any indictment.
We will not, and we will support that effort as much as we can possibly can.
The people that have asked me about whether or not we're going to have a rate increase, my response is, yes, probably every year, a minimum of inflation plus whatever. You're talking about $1 million a year for the next 3 years to replace meters.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got a choice of replacing a bunch of meters this week or repairing a burst pipe, There's no choice where you're going. You're going to the burst pipe. So your workload isn't as predictable as the budget would like it to be. And we all have to recognize that. And we just can't look at all the work we're doing at Crossland Park. 6 years ago when I got in council, who thought we would have to do that work? And that's taken, we've already committed about 90% of the capital projects money for water and sewer. I mean, that's money that's supposed to last us through, I don't know, 2019 or something like that. So, I mean, we have to face facts. We are not in control of what happens in the water and sewer budget, much as we'd like to think we are, because we can't predict when we're going to have a pipe that burst. I mean, even during Project PAX, we had, what, two water leaks on Whiskey Road?
We
right
did.
In the middle of the storm.
We did.
Now, guess what? We didn't budget for that money to fix that, but we had to spend it. And I got a feeling, I don't see any reason why we won't be here next year making these same concerns and complaints and so forth, because we had to spend money on something that we didn't know about. What are we've got $1 million drain thing on Chesterfield that it just came to my attention about 3 months ago.
The storm drain.
The storm water down the railroad track.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know about that till 3 months ago. Well, guess what? If we were talking the budget last year, we didn't know about that, but we've got to spend that money. Because we have no choice. I mean, we have got to fix people's water.
We will work hard to do value engineering to, you know, make that cost effective as possible, and we will, you know, engage in, you know, creative design so that we hopefully can minimize the cost.
I have utmost respect, George, for the work that you and your department does, and I think Councilwoman Price said the same thing, and I think everybody on council feels the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you can't predict what you're going to be doing tomorrow.
That's
because
true.
I mean, our infrastructure is that old.
But that's precisely why you can't put numbers in the ordinance, I don't think. That's
right.
I mean, you just made the great point.
No,
why you can't.
But the reason I wanted the numbers in the ordinance is so we wouldn't wait until next February to discover that we need to have an increase. I'd like to look at it, I don't know what month, whether it's September or October. I'd like to look at it. We want to defer everything to Horizons, which happens in the end of January. I'd like to look at it in the August-September time frame. Maybe that we don't have enough data then, but we can at least look at it. And if we don't have enough data in September, maybe we can look at October. I'll do anything to avoid a 10% increase. 10% is hard to sell.
Yeah, and again, we are providing council with quarterly updates, and that plainly shows revenues, that plainly shows expenditures. So we have been doing that on a quarterly basis, and of course, we've been making it available, the checks that we've written, on a monthly basis as well. And again, I appreciate the compliments of George in the public session, and I think he deserves them, because what I've seen with George's work over the last several months is we want to get away from the triage and get more to the planning, so we know where we do the work, so we don't have to have a pipe burst in order to know what we're doing. And that just takes time to put into effect, and I think George came to you at Horizons, and of course he's going to have an opportunity in our budget workshops next month to talk about some of the priorities that he sees for our utilities and his reasons for that. So that should be a real good, productive discussion. And that's something we can do with the budget every year. That's just not a problem.
Well, my concerns and most of my calls have been from people on fixed incomes who are already struggling in this economy. You know, food is going up, gas is going up, now the water is going up. And, you know, yeah, we say $4 a week, but $4 a week is a lot for so many people.
It's $1 a week.
I mean, $1 a week, $4 a month, $4.50 a month. So people have been calling me, asking me, you know, well, if it's going to go up this much this year, what are we going to do next year? We're already struggling to pay the bill that we get already. So I'm with everybody else. We really got to do a better job of planning.
Mr. Mayor, I think we need to hear from our citizens.
We certainly do. Anything else for George?
Okay. Thanks, George.
All right, thank you, George.
Thank you, George.
Who would like to speak on this subject? Yes, sir. If you would come up and just give us your name, that would be sufficient.
My name is Tom Dean. I live in Hounds Lake, a long-term Aiken resident, about 24 years. I'm totally in support of your effort to maintain and upgrade the water and sewer system in Aiken. And listening to the discussion, I think a monthly spending plan projection might be very helpful to kind of put things in perspective. And I did attend the workshop meeting the last time you discussed this, and it looks like over 50% of the costs or expenditures are really not under the authority control. In other words, they're mandated, and you know exactly what their outlay is going to be every month for a large number of these categories. And that should then highlight what kind of allowance needs to be done for unplanned occurrences. And if you could look back over what your average unplanned occurrences, that may help you do a little projection of what unplanned occurrences might entail and how that fits with your proposed revenues. So I'm supporting the effort totally, and I wish you well.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks. Appreciate that. Who would like to speak next? Yes, sir.
Hey, Mr. Mayor. My name is Virgil Sauls, and I live in the Magnolia Street area of Aiken. I want to thank you, city council members, city manager, who put up with my emails, who talked to me, who provided me responses, and pointed me to various documents that helped me better understand this rationale behind the cost increase. But I still have a couple of questions. The city director of finance has said that even with a 10% rate increase, the fund will be short $557,000. How is that additional $557,000 going to be made up? Mr. Dwyer does not give me a whole warm, fuzzy feeling talking about a rate increase next year, and he and I have discussed this. I understand the need for a rate increase periodically, yearly, to cover inflation, but not 10% there. So my question is, how are you going to cover the $557,000? Or are we going to be back here in a year or two discussing another 10% rate increase? Second question. This will be the third rate increase in the past 4 years. These rate increases total almost 30%. That's a pretty large cost increase over a short period of time, well in excess of inflation. What actions, in addition to accounting for inflation, are being taken to assure that the significant rate increases will not be required in the future? Thank you.
Virgil, before you go, I think that several folks have spoken to some of these issues, and I think very well, and I certainly agree with them, that we need to get back to our plan, and I'll first admit, too, that we've missed the boat on keeping up with the depreciation, number one, and keeping up with things on every year. I think it's very true that we need to get back to a point where we will have perhaps a small increase for inflation, whatever, maybe every year, or maybe every year. But we're not there now, unfortunately. Now, I think some of us, myself included, probably thought all along the last thing we want to do is come to the citizens for a tax increase. And we proved that so far on the property tax increase. And 25 years we haven't had a major increase on our part of it. Now, that doesn't mean to say that the increases haven't gone up in our on our property because of other things, but it's not because of the city increasing the fee. As a matter of fact, they lowered our fee for a time. And I hope we don't have to have a property tax increase anytime soon. But I think we do have to get our managing of this back to where it should be. And very likely there will be, I think, and Tim and Kim can speak to it also better than we. She has the numbers. I think there probably will be an increase again next year. I don't know how much. But I think there are others that feel the same way. Until we get back on the track, the train is off the track. We've got to get back on the track. And I'll also say this: that everything. I don't know of anything that the city manager has not done. It all comes to council. All of us have been on council for a number of years, some more than others. And we've got the obligation to ask these questions. Sometimes perhaps we forget the questions or we don't think to ask the questions. But it's up to us to also ask questions of what we're looking at before we pass the budget. And so I'm certainly not putting all the blame at all on our staff for where we are now. The other thing is, had we done it, let's say, another way, and that is look at it every year before, that would be look at the increases that we would have had. Mm-hmm. We would have the same, probably the same increases, but they'd been in steps. And I think we all were hoping for a lot less rain than we got. Not that that's the only thing. That's only a piece of it. City managers outlined seven things that basically that the money is going for. So it's not just that, but certainly that didn't help us any. So I think we've got to do a better job of managing.
And as to the shortage, Mr. Sauls, of course, to the extent we don't have the revenue, we will not make the expenditures. We present a balanced budget. So if we are $557,000 short, that's $557,000 we cannot spend.
But are you going to try to make up that? Are you going to try to make up that $557,000, or is the depreciation fund just going to be short $557,000 when the fiscal year ends?
I can't predict what the depreciation account contribution would be right now, because we don't have a vote on the ordinance. But again, that is something we have to take a look at. The $557,000, if in fact that's the exact amount of the shortage, that's just money we cannot spend because the revenue didn't come in.
But are you going to try to recoup that revenue next year, or is that just revenue that you are not going to have an opportunity to collect? That's my question, Mr. Pierce. Is over $500,000 still sitting out there? That your finance director says is still going to be a shortfall.
Well, we are going to have a budget shortfall, yes.
And my question is, are you going to have to collect that money from raising the rates again, or is it just going to get written off?
Well, if I look at the history, I'm kind of the numbers guy here. If I look at our records for the last 8 or 10 years, unless we have a banner year selling water, that's just lost. And that's what's happening. And it's not lost. It's just not brought in and not spent as the city manager is. The chances of us making up, we got to have a drought in the next 4 months, maybe 5 months. And I look at the amount of water we're pumping per day. We got to pump an extra million and a half gallons a day for the next 4 or 5 months, and that's just not going to happen. So that money just goes by the past, as we said earlier, where there was only $1 million put in. That other 170,000-180,000, that just isn't spent that year. And I don't think there's much of a chance to gain that money back unless we have a drought in the next 5 or 6 months. And, you know, I can't predict the weather, but I think that's the reality we have to look at, Virgil.
Okay.
And the frustration, Virgil, is that in every other department, we're able to predict with a little more accuracy than we are with public works. You can't predict when a pipe is going to break. You can't predict some of those things, as we've mentioned earlier. I won't beat a dead horse. But those are real live problems when you're dealing with an aging infrastructure that we have.
Oh, yes. I understand that. And the documents that you referred me to, you know, help me better understand that. But the number got hung out there and never could get a good, clear answer on it.
Well,
and I think I now have that answer.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
All right. Don't count on it.
Mayor Cavanaugh, the other thing I would agree with you on is council does need to do a better job of watching the expenditures and revenue streams.
We do.
This account.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Virgil.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your interest.
Yes, sir.
Who would like to be next? Okay. Not seeing anyone, then it's back to council. Any other comments?
Well, we've got a motion and a second.
We have a motion and a second. Okay. Do we have show of hands? All in favor of this, unfortunately? Okay. Passes unanimously.
Can I add something to the record, too, Mr. Mayor? I know that the votes have been taken.
Certainly.
With that. When I asked the question about this 10% increase, and people thought it was steep, the phrase that I used was we had, in my opinion, we had three choices. We either raise taxes, raise the rate, or do nothing. Do nothing is not an option. Because if we do nothing, then we're in worse shape than we are right now. We can't pay our bills. No one wants their taxes raised, I think. Everywhere you go, people are just fearful of taxes being raised. The $4 or $5, whatever amount of water you use, is less impactful per month than a tax increase. So that is where I sit in terms of the record with my approval of this 10% tonight.
Okay. Under new business, first reading of an ordinance to approve the sublease between Aiken Aviation Enterprises and Hilton Head Flyers LLC. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance approving the sublease of property at the Aiken Municipal Airport. Mike Laver, who is the principal in Aiken Aviation Enterprises, has entered into a commercial lease agreement with Hilton Head Flyers, and that's to have a flight school out at our Aiken Municipal Airport. Your aviation commission did take a look at this and recommend that council approve the agreement, and they had an opportunity to talk with the principals of the flying school. So this is for first reading. Since it's city-owned property that's being leased, my understanding from our city attorney is that it must be approved by an ordinance, and this is first reading of that ordinance to approve this sublease.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
I second.
Okay, discussion. I'm assuming here that the city would get revenue from the additional fuel that's sold.
You are absolutely right. Under the operations agreement, yes, sir, we get a fuel flow fee. And I don't know why that's hard to say, but it is tonight.
Okay, all right. Show of hands, please, all in favor.
passes unanimously. Second item, first reading of an ordinance to annex 1.2 acres at the corner of Hudson Road and Lindsay Drive in zone at RS-15, residential single family. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance to annex to the corporate limits of the city of Aiken certain property owned by D&M Enterprises of Aiken and to zone the same residential single family in parentheses RS-6 close print. This annexation application was reviewed by the Planning Commission at their meeting on March 12, 2014. They voted 7-0 to recommend approval of the annexation because it was consistent with our comprehensive land use plan. So for council consideration in first reading tonight is annexation of this property at Hudson Road and Lindsay Drive.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
I so move.
Second.
Second. Discussion?
Just a question. It's going to be, it's 1.2 acres and it's zoned RS-6. Mm-hmm. What is, does that mean he can build six houses there? Or?
No, actually it's the indication of the minimum lot size, and the minimum lot size would have to be 6,000 square feet. So at 1.2 acres, it easily meets that minimum standard.
How many square feet is that, Mr. Developer?
About 48,000. You could get about eight houses on it at RS-6, depending upon the layout of the property. Probably seven, really.
Okay, but if he wanted to build anything else, he would have to go through the right process.
There'd have to be a variance that the Board of Zoning Appeals would have to consider.
Okay. He can build whatever he can get 6,000 adjoining square feet, so he could get seven houses,
right,
possibly eight,
yeah,
under the current zoning,
under the RS-6.
Yep.
Okay. There are minimum setbacks and access issues that have to be considered.
Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 3, first reading of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding electronic reader boards. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you very much, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance amending the City of Aiken zoning ordinance regarding electronic reader boards. You have in your agenda packet the proposed actual language that would be added that's underlined and in bold, and then you have language that's stricken through that would actually be removed. Mr. Evans alerted me that there was one mistake in the exhibit that you have, and that was under the illumination provisions, and that was subsection D. That's on page 135 in your agenda packet. The sentence currently says, the sentence needs to read this. Let me just do it this way. Under illumination, this is on page 135. It's under section 4.4.10, subsection D is illumination. It should read, signs in residential districts shall be illuminated only by external incandescent lighting, except for an electronic reader board included in a PR concept plan approved by City Council, or for a school, church, governmental, or tax-exempt entity as permitted by section 4.4.7.E.2. So we're replacing the words approved through special exception by the Board of Zoning Appeals. It would say just as permitted by the ordinance. The special exception approval was something that Planning Commission considered originally, but then they abandoned that. So the recommendation from Planning Commission that took it up on March 12th was to approve the amendments with that exception, and we'll certainly make sure that's corrected for second reading for these amendments for electronic reader boards. That's for consideration by council tonight.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second for approval of this?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay. Discussion?
Yes, sir. I have a question. Am I reading it correctly that it's only going to allow these in planned commercial. Well, actually, this says including a PR concept plan, which would be planned residential.
Mm-hmm.
But first off, are they really intended to be in a planned residential zone?
On page 131, it gives GBLI, I, and LM.
Mr. Evans is here. Ed, can you come up and address Mr. Yeah. Mayor's question, please?
Is Ron here? Did Big Ron come?
No,
I don't see him.
I have to say Big Ron because I can't remember.
Mr. Evans.
Ronnie Wade.
Ron Wade. His name's Ron
Wade.
Ron
Wade, yeah.
Wade, but he is. He's told me he's big, so I can use that word.
You can use it, Reggie.
Yeah.
As Mr. Evans said, on page 131, e-reader boards, 2A underneath that.
Mary.
Electronic reader boards are allowed in GB and the three industrial zones, as well as potentially PR.
What about PC?
And plan commercial.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That clears it up.
Ed, before you go, the item here that includes... the reader boards could be at schools, what have you. Does that mean that we could have a reader board in front of Mead Hall?
That's subject to the historic district.
Well, that's one school, obviously, the downtown school.
Yeah, that's the downtown overlay district.
And it's probably downtown business DB zone, which would not allow reader boards.
Oh, okay, okay. We could have these on Whiskey Road.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. I've been concerned ever since I've heard about flashing signs, to tell you the truth, and I would hope we'd have some discussion about that and maybe relieve my fears of having flashing signs, even though it's every 10 seconds, as I read, that they could change. It bothers me a little bit from just, and it would be wonderful to hear what the business community, and perhaps we will on second reading, I hope, feels about it. I may be the only one that has some fears here that you could have so many of these things flashing, changing at one time or another, going down the road, and what effect. And I know what the answer will be from those who sell reader boards, and I'm not saying they're wrong, but they would say that really it's not going to affect the drivers of cars and that kind of thing. But you get a busy road, like we have a couple of, and you put a number of these things on down, I still have a wonder, I guess it is, of what it's going to look like. Also, safety first.
Well, they're not flashing, though, Mr. Mayor.
And no, they're not flashing. They're just changing, and that's better that they're not flashing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we wouldn't put up that flashing. Yeah.
And again, perhaps I'm overdoing my fear here a little bit. And did any of that kind of discussion come up in the planning session that I didn't attend from any concerns?
To a limited degree, there was not a lot of discussion about it. I mean, some.
Okay.
Is there anything, Ed, in here about the responsibility of these kinds of signs, keeping them visible? I know that's always been an issue. I didn't know whether you were going to deal with it one at a time, or is that something you're going to deal with later when you go to the ordinance? You know, some of the shrubbery that grows up and doesn't allow you to see the sign?
The Planning Commission is discussing that now.
Okay.
They'll deal with that at their next work session.
Okay.
I think there was something in here about that, wasn't there?
That's why I didn't. That's why I asked.
Instead of putting trees in line where...
It's just this one only, and I was in the meeting with them there. This only covers where the sign is in relation to the right-of-way. And they've already had some good discussion about... I always use the famous one at Target. When the leaves are on the trees, you can't see any of those signs going down that side of the road, and they're discussing that. I don't think any of those words are in this, as far as I remember it.
No.
That's a separate I forgot where it comes under. I'm not an ordinance guy, but it's in a different place.
Okay.
Ed, before you leave, were you ever approached by Barry Berry for a sign yet?
I thought Tommy
got approval for a wall sign.
Okay.
Right.
I know they had some issues in the beginning they were concerned about, so they did get approved for...
For a wall sign.
A wall sign. Right. Where would that be located?
I think it's on the side... Wow. I think it faces west, I believe, above their main entrance. They could have another sign on the Richland Avenue side, which I don't think they have.
It's Walmart.
A couple of things before the business has come up, and I wish I found Mr. Wade is Ron's last name. The 10 seconds that we put in here is the same as the county uses. Is my understanding, isn't that right, Ed? They use a 10-second change cycle.
I believe that's correct.
Okay. And then there was a lot of discussion about using a MIT, which is a new electronic measurement. I noticed we went to foot candles in here, and that's okay with the industry to use the foot candle. That's a standard measurement.
That's what they recommended.
Use that instead of a MIT.
Yeah.
Very good.
Okay. That's my little case. We'll learn more about it. Any other discussion?
We need from the businesses.
Anyone like to speak on this issue? Yes. Okay. I'm sorry.
Well, thank you. My name is Mark Steinkamp, and as the mayor mentioned, I'm one of the guys that makes his living selling signs like this, so that's where I'm coming from. But first of all, I'd like to say that Mr. Wade could not make it tonight, so he would have loved to have been here. I know he and I have been hoping and trying to help the Planning Commission come up with a very responsible code, and I think they've done that, so we appreciate the work that they've done. On the flashing issue, I think it's very appropriate that has been prohibited in the ordinance. And I know safety is a concern. There have been numerous studies over the last several years that have provided evidence that there is no correlation between changing signs and traffic accidents. So I can provide any of those studies if you would like. Those are my main points that I'd like to make. Again, I appreciate the consideration of the ordinance. I think, in closing, that you will provide business owners an opportunity to be more successful with this technology, making them able to communicate better with their customers and potential customers.
Has that been proven also in your studies?
The Small Business Administration published a study, I believe it was in 2001, that showed an average increase of 15% growth in sales and up to, they claimed, 150% growth for certain businesses, certain types of businesses. So there has been some evidence of that as well, published through the Small Business Administration.
Okay. Well, thank you for that input.
Appreciate it.
Anyone else? Yeah. Excuse me.
Thank you for this opportunity. I want to thank you guys for what you do, because you put up with much more than I would ever be able to put up with. I'm Richard Heaton with TLC Medical Center. We're a small community pharmacy on Silver Bluff Road. Ironically, 5 years ago, we put up a reader board in belief that one day, as Noah believed, something's going to change. That change is coming. I know you don't want rain, but we do on a reader board. This is a grand opportunity for us as a small business. And I'll only keep you but just a moment. From an information perspective, we have to have a relationship with our community. We compete with the chains. We compete with the big guys. Okay? And the only thing we can do is advertise what little we can. We spent $27,000 5 years ago on a reader board. And we can get messages out to people. We can get messages out to people about diabetes education. We can get messages out to people about changes in medication. We can get information out to the community on a strawberry festival or a chocolate festival. Or even ironically, we would even be able to get information out to the community on Amber Alert type issues. We want to be a part. We have to be a part of the community. All of our money stays in Aiken. All of our people are from Aiken. We need your support on this. One last component, and I do want to emphasize this as a pharmacy, as we look more toward disaster preparedness and issues that do confront our communities, we want your input, and I believe that other participants in this would want your input on what we can do for the community. So I would urge your support of this, and I do not want a flashing sign either.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Richard. Okay, anyone else? Okay, we've got a motion second. Show of hands, please. Passes unanimously. Item 4, first reading of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding... No, that's 4. First reading of an ordinance to amend the fiscal year 2013-14 budget to replace Citizens Park Field 5 backstop damaged by winter storm PAX. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance amending the budget of the City of Aiken for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2013 and ending June 30, 2014. Ms. Rideout has put up on the big screen for us the damage to our backstop at Field 5 at Citizens Park. We did make a claim with our insurance carrier. They've informed us in writing that our insurance policy would not cover this damage. Therefore, we have gone to bid, and we know that the cost to replace this will be $29,781.83. Again, this is directly related to winter storm packs, and we will seek reimbursement from FEMA. But in the meantime, we've got softball, baseball, several other seasons getting ready to crank up, so we need to go ahead and fix the backstop. So that's for council approval on first reading tonight.
Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
I second.
Comments? If not, show hands, please. All in favor. Passes unanimously. Okay, and petitions. Chris?
Yes, we had a request from Mr. Ebner regarding an update on the Crossland Park house inventory, and the council should have found that inventory, which I emailed earlier today in the hard copies, I promise.
Ms. Sarah's going to put the page up there, and... I've been, along with the rest of council, we've been following this for some period of time, and obviously this, there's a lot of good work been done all over the city, from downtown to the north and the south and the east and the west. I think what has happened specifically on the north side is the successes we had early on kind of got dampened when the recession hit, and they got dampened a whole lot. And what... I think we need to do, and we had a meeting last year out at Crossland Park to discuss some different things to do. And once you get the page up there, one of the things that we decided to do and has been started is the demolition of the houses that have been, were, if you will, kind of run down, and they've been boarded up for the last 5 years. So. That was priority one. Then the second thing, and I noticed on the list you just sent out, that the 1243 George house now is empty. That obviously needs to have some painting and stuff done. And what I'm proposing is that we look at this, and I didn't ask for a vote of anything tonight, but I wanted to get us thinking about it and come forward next meeting with the plan what we need to do. The other thing is item 3. We need a decision on Mr. Roberts' house, I think it was 1258 Aubrey. That's item number three on the list that's up there. That was a separate ordinance that we passed since I've been on council. And that was a lease to renovate and purchase, and that fell through.
It did.
And I don't know if we know, and Mr. Smith may have to help us and see if that needs an ordinance to reverse what we agreed to do. Because we did agree to sell it for a certain price, and we'd furnished, you know, there was a list of things we would do there. And I think we need to clear that one up from the, if it's an ordinance, we have to rescind of what we need to do. And so I would need to
review the file to see what was done.
I think we need to do that from to be sure that the house is clear for the future. So someday Mr. Roberts come back and said, well, the city ordinance said I bought that house. And I understand there's extenuating circumstances in here, but we need to clear that house up, and we'll use the term legally. And that ordinance is probably 2 years ago, plus or minus.
So you would repeal the ordinance?
That's 1243 George.
We have not repealed it yet, to my knowledge.
1258
Aldrich. 1258 Aldrich.
I think it's 1258. The mailbox is gone when I drove by there, but it's on Aldrich about that number. And I think that's an important thing to get it cleaned up. Then the decision has to be made whether it's worth fixing up or demolish it. Okay.
We do have our property maintenance inspector working with our special projects coordinator. They are looking at all these houses to see what is salvageable.
Yeah, and that would be added to the vacant homes, and if they're boarded up, they need to be torn down. Then the next thing, we're doing a good job on cleanup and getting the right-of-ways and stuff like that. We need to keep that done. I think Ms. Emery brought up at the Horizons about a development plan. And just me calling up a couple of folks and talking to them, they all kind of come across with the same idea. And I don't know that we are on a path to get a development plan officially from somebody, and it's something you would have to pay for. Mm-hmm. And so I don't, at some point we need to come up with what the outside world would look at doing with this area that's got 550 homes in it, has tax value, you know, neighborhood value and that. And so that's a food for thought, but we need to do something currently with that. That house at 1160 Cornish, that's the other one that somebody was the lease to own. Mm-hmm. They've been in there almost 5 years, and we need to really look at that and see if that is a feasible lease to own. And I don't know if you have the status of that where we are, but
the payment plan's current. We discussed that this morning. But if we were to change that, I mean, that's we have a discussion about that. But as far as the payments that are due, that's been paid.
Okay, and so
check on all that.
And it looks feasible for them to go to purchase the house one day.
Now, the second part of that, Mr. Edmund, I need to check on that. I just know that they're current in their payments.
Okay. But we need to do that and see if we need to, you know, rework that loan. That was one of the higher-priced houses that we put somebody in. Mm-hmm. And we've since reduced the prices mm-hmm. in the neighborhood of $20,000 to $30,000 a house.
We did.
So, Mr. Mayor, I think that's one of these, and Ms. Price and Ms. Diggs can help out there. We need to take a look at that house specifically for the family that's in it. And I understand it's a good family, but obviously economic times.
That's at 1160 Cornish.
1160 Cornish.
1160 Cornish.
And I think there's probably some things that we need to look at with that particular house. And what I'm going down these is to kind of get us up to date. Item 7, CDIC rents for some houses for the city.
They do.
And I never did go back and read the agreement with them.
It's a property management agreement. They perform the maintenance services on that. And, again, they collect a fee for managing the property.
All right. Do we have, and maybe it's a discussion item, do we have anything in the future for these four houses, or once we sell these others, we're going to tear them down or renovate them? What is our long, you know, our next 5-year plan? They've been rented for 5 years now.
They have been rented for 5 years, and it goes to what you were saying, Mr. Ebner. Of course, anytime we relocate someone as part of this revitalization project, we have to pay relocation expenses, and it's
nonsense.
Fairly significant investment.
So how long are they able to rent before they're encouraged to purchase?
I don't have a date, Ms. Diggs. I mean, they are current in their payments. We did check on that.
Well, the current agreement that's written, and I read this in the Aiken Carp notes, mm-hmm. is they could keep re-renting the houses. And mm-hmm. maybe following up on Ms. Diggs is saying, once that particular individual moves out, we shouldn't re-rent the houses. We should put them for renovate and resell or something.
Right, and that's exactly the way we have them designated.
Yeah, right now the agreement, unless it's been changed, and I don't know if that's a city council issue or what, but it says they can be re-rented. And so if you do that, then, you know, if the city doesn't say, don't rent it anymore, we'll take the property back over, it's just going to stay there forever, and it doesn't get put in the mill to be redone.
I understand your point. And, again, we would not want to be – it's very clear that the special projects coordinator and I have specifically discussed it. We want to get out of the rental business. We want to work our way out of
it. So have we sent a letter to Mr. Varner? Is it Varner? Reggie? Is that going to take city council action since we had action to let him do that?
Well, and again, I didn't know that was your specific question. We could certainly look into that.
If you'd look into that, just like these other. That's why I put this on discussion tonight.
Sure.
So that we got to clean up some things that are anywhere from 5 to 15 years old.
Well, we're talking about rental. If we do that for item number 7, mm-hmm. we probably need to establish something for all rentals.
I think this is going to end it.
It would, Mayor.
This would get us out of the rental business.
Okay.
As far as I know, there hasn't any other shown up that I've been following. I've talked to Mr. Varner, and he agrees there's only that many that he manages for the city.
Right.
The other thing we need to check on, we built 22 sheds with the USCA and Aiken Tech students. We need to be sure that those are 22 at the right house, and if I'm not mistaken, we may have two stored somewhere. Can Ms. Emery run
a
check
on
those?
They're at the operations center where Mr. Coakley is. We've got those in storage.
So we got now the houses that should have one have one. That's what other thing I want to be sure.
Yes, or should, but we'll double check that.
I think you need to check that. Some of them I can't see when I drive by the back of the house, but the students did work, and we actually worked in the neighborhood on some of those.
You did?
Mm-hmm. Item 9, we need to get us into reality what money is dedicated to the north side. Capital Project 3 had the $1,750,000, and we're going to use about a mill and a half of that to pay off the loan to the Water and Sewer Department, which will be in December of this year. That leaves us about $255,000 for the north side after that. And those funds won't be available till 2016 unless we borrow against them. And then item 10, which is on Mr. Pierce's, or really on the agenda for Aiken Carp, mm-hmm. is how to use the $328,000 housing development loan. Since that was initiated, I guess, 10 or 12 years ago, basically the grants that we could get through Aiken Carp and not for the city, all of those have died in 2010 and 2011. So that is a callable loan from Aiken Carp to the city.
It's a two-year call.
And one way maybe to do that is to call the loan, and we put that money in, back in the kitty to work on the north side. So I put all these items here so we can get up to date, and then I think Mr. Pierce needs to go through these and then come back at the next meeting and say, okay, do we want to use the money that we have to go ahead and demolition these 7 houses and do the other things we need to do that I've listed, and I may not have listed everything to do. So my proposal is a discussion item tonight.
Well, what are they doing with the ones that's for sale? Are there regular open houses?
Yes, we have. We have one after the first of the year, and we've got another one scheduled for May.
Okay.
We've actually had quite a pickup in interest in the houses, and Emery we were again meeting this morning and mentioned that folks are beginning to stop by our office.
Are we doing a good job of advertising these open houses?
Well, the last open house was pretty much a rain out, but again, we do promote those. We do Facebook, Twitter. We've worked with the local media. We've advertised in print media as well, the Aiken Standard. We do have those on the website with a virtual tour as well. We were updating those photographs. So, and we work through the real estate agencies as well, and they put it in their materials. But we've had one house sold. We've got another house we believe is going to be ready to sell in April, and then we've got, by the end of April, we'll know about a third house in Carlson Park with a potential buyer for it.
Can I get a copy about the size of our district election maps of Carlson Park so I can kind of map these properties on it?
Yeah, we already have the maps. Are you want it in a hard copy, or you want
hard
electronic?
Copy.
Hard copy.
District. Yeah, one of those. Because I've got to mark these houses on it.
We have that map available already.
They're marked.
You won't have to mark
maps.
It. It's already colored.
Okay, well, that's great. Marked. I mean, the reason I want to look at that is, you know, I don't know that we need to go out and get a consultant for a development plan, but the thing that we didn't do is we didn't look at a neighborhood. We just looked at the entire complex of High Crossland Park instead of looking at a neighborhood and working on maybe 10 or 20 or 30 houses, mm-hmm. and getting them up to speed and just expanding that peripherally. And ultimately, and I think we all had grand illusions that we'd be much more successful than we turned out to be. The intent was right. There's no question about what we're doing.
Well,
we're
there doing is right this thing. One street. What is the street now?
We went over this at the work session last summer, and we have gone with a couple of different consultants and shown them the area, and they're interested. The issue is money.
Yeah.
We need the money to do the study, and of course they have some great ideas, some great suggestions. And if I'm hearing you right, Mr. Duarte, it goes to the issue of what we were talking about, where you identify a section that's appropriate for the redevelopment, do that, and then build on that. And the consultants.
The biggest mistake was doing random houses,
yes,
rather than having an entire street. It would have gone very well if you had focused on just one street at a time, renovated all the houses on that particular street, market that particular area. I think you could have sold those houses and gone on to the next.
Well, let's not lose sight of the downturn in the economy
that terribly. But then when you look at where the houses are, they're in random locations, and you look at everything around them, and that's going to have an impact on the sale of a house.
Yeah. But those were ones that people wanted, and it just worked out that you had to have somebody
but you have to
show
understand
that you're building.
That renovated house was selling for $80,000. Everything around that renovated house was selling for $30,000. And I don't think anybody, any smart person, would put $80,000 in a house that has $30,000 houses around it, because they won't be able, if they needed to sell that house, they wouldn't be able to get their money out of it. Yeah. They'd never be able to.
I agree with that.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And then the consultants that we drove through, they said exactly that. They agree with it.
And my last question, I mention it every time you do, is I'd love to see the source authority that says we have to pay to relocate people out of Carlson Park.
If it's federal regulation, we'd be glad to get that for you.
I'd love to see it. I don't remember.
Yes, sir.
I'm voting on that.
We'll be glad to. It's a HUD requirement.
You can't put them out in the street with no parents for it.
Path forward is HUD reimbursement. Here's Mr. Smith. The path forward is to come back with answers. The path forward is to come back with answers to the appropriate questions from Mr. Pierce and Mr. Smith. And then we need to talk about the $105,000 or $10,000 that we got from the sale of two houses. And if we want to, my recommendation is going to be to tear down the vacant houses, and then council need to decide that we want to go ahead and get the study and the number used at the Risings by Ms. Emery was 60,000 or 70,000, and that's kind of the number I got from two or three people. You get a pretty highfalutin thing for that. I looked at one of them that somebody had done, and Augusta's doing one of them now. So at the next meeting, I would think we need to have a petition for a vote on it. So please look at that. So thank you, Mr. Pierce.
Yes, sir.
Can I add something to what Mr. Ebner has said regarding Northside? The Two Hill area is waiting patiently for that senior facility. I know that we've got a lot of things on the plate, Richard, but they're patient with what we can come up with moving forward with that.
Yeah.
And I know that Gail is anxious for the the recreational facility, but the funds is there as well in terms of where we're going with that direction as well.
Okay. And that was something we were working on this spring. We wanted to have something worked out by June. What we have is money for site acquisition and for design.
Right.
We don't have the $3.5 million for the center. That's money that's yet to come in. So that's probably at least 2 or 3 years down the road. And but again, we are working on that, and we'll be happy to provide whatever information we have. I've passed out 11 by 17. I heard from Tim Coakley today. For the first pass, they're 87.6% done with the first pass through. I know you're getting calls from residents. We're trying to clean up the areas as much as we can. As far as I'm concerned, versus 2004, we're way ahead on the debris pickup. The council approved the purchase of additional equipment for public services. It served us very well. The city of Greenville has helped us in Woodside subdivision, and Garvin Oil Company has committed a driver and an 18-wheeler dump truck to help us with the debris hauling. We're in process. We've talked and had conversations with folks that are interested in the debris once it's chipped up and mulched, so we're going out with a proposal on that, and we'll have more information for council on it. But so far, we've collected 79,437 cubic yards of storm debris. 2004 was about 100,000 total, and we're well on track to double that.
Who follows the state, or does this include the state highways and the county pickup?
You know, thank you so much, Mr. Evans. We had kind of an interesting meeting last week, didn't we, Tim? It turns out that the South Carolina Department of Transportation has done no debris collection within the bypass, the South Carolina 118 bypass. They've done zero collection in a month. That all changed last week. They've staged for Kalmia Hill. And where were they on the south side, Tim? Alpine Drive, right. So they are beginning their pickup. We talked with the county. And I really feel for folks in like Aiken Estates and Bonneview. Again, they just haven't touched it because for whatever reason that 118 bypass was this boundary they set up. So anyway, they're beginning that debris collection, so they are working on it.
Who can we, when we put these notices out, and I'm getting, talking to just people that I know that live in these particular neighborhoods, and they're taking the information that we're putting out is including their streets.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what we're just talking about, the city.
And how, I know we are, but they do pay taxes for everything else, and they get city water and all that kind of good stuff. How do we get information out from the state and the county?
We'll be glad to post that on our website and, Facebook it and tweet it.
But obviously they must be a little bit slow because a drive through the downtown is, from Boardman all the way to Hampton and almost a bypass to Buford. You know, a big share of that is state highways. And I sure don't see anybody trying to run me off the road as I drive down there picking up bushes and cutting tree limbs.
Yes, and again, that goes to what I was saying. They didn't do anything inside the South Carolina 118 bypass.
Well, they haven't done anything in the last 2 months.
Nothing. Nothing since the storm. But that all changed because we had that meeting last week and discussed.
Is that our job as the city council to help the folks that unfortunately live on a state highway but still pay city taxes? How can we help them out?
City taxes.
If it's in the city limits, we're picking up that debris.
On the state highways?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. We've had that agreement for decades.
And they, I thought the memo I read in here that we weren't picking up on state. One of the memos you sent out that we were not picking up on state highways.
No, sir, I wouldn't have put that.
I'm looking for outside of the city limits. We're not picking it up.
Right. City limits, I'm not picking up. We're picking up in the city limits.
So you're picking up on state highways that are in the city limits?
Yes. Because that's what we do routinely. Folks pay yard trash.
And they're going to pay us. And they're going to pay.
Except for the bypass.
Right. That's SCDOT.
And so, and they're going to pay us back 100% for picking up the trash on the city, on state highways?
No, 25%.
25 plus the 75 from...
Whoa, I don't understand your question. Can we ask it another way?
If the state picked it up, it wouldn't cost us anything. So are we going to get reimbursed 75% for FEMA and 25% from SCDOT for state highways in the city limits?
No. Let me put it to you. I think I'm answering your question. I really want to answer your question. We have state highways we pick up on all the time, and residents pay us a yard trash fee. We are going to seek reimbursement for all that debris we pick up because we're obligated to pick it up. We had our city attorney research that, and we are on the hook for the hazard in the city limits, even though it's DOT's right-of-way. So we'll get reimbursed for that.
All right, so we'll get reimbursed for everything we pick up on south. I'm going to use south boundary as an example. Everything we pick up and all the tree limbs we cut, we get 100% reimbursement.
We are filing the claim for the reimbursement. Now, I can't tell you it's 100%. Uh-huh. It's 75% for FEMA. We're going to participate in the pilot project. So to the extent we pick up within 72 hours, 30 days, 90 days, and 180 days, there's a reimbursement left.
Well, our good Senator Young put out an email that on state highways we get the other 25%.
Yeah, I'll
be glad to send the bill to him and let him pay it.
I spoke to him, and he said that obviously comes with the approval by the state legislature.
That's
the
right.
Process.
That's right.
And I would remind everybody, it's an election year, so we got some leverage.
That's outstanding. We're going to use that leverage. I'd love to get 100%. I really would.
About the county now, who do we deal with? Who do I tell to call in the county? I need to call Mr. Killian?
We've worked with Clay Killian. He was in the meeting last week. Both DOT and the county have a contractor, but they've actually, you know, directed them.
Last question I got on that. How about the 501c3 Property Owners Association? We got 13 or 15 of them around the city that are cleaning up their common areas. And they are a state-identified entity, just like the city. Can they claim for that?
They would need to file a request for assistance with FEMA, and now's the time to do it.
Okay, so
FEMA will investigate that.
I think we have a list of POAs in the city.
Not a comprehensive list, I don't think. But
well, there's a list of 13 or 15 to follow. I know Betty is over one out here at Tool Hill, and
she's right there.
Who would do that for us? There she is.
We've picked up in Tool Hill.
All right. But how about the common areas?
No, we haven't.
No one has been here. We played with USC Aiken. I have filed with a basketball player.
Yep.
And myself, the only one in the neighborhood. We played from the park, Paris Street. We even did the cemetery. Everything you see out there.
Good. Did you put it at the curb then?
We put it right beside the curb, yeah.
Okay. I'll get with Mr. Coakley. We'll take a look at that, Ms. Myers. Yeah.
All right.
I've heard of that. So.
So these entities need to file directly with FEMA and with FEMA.
If they're a nonprofit organization, and at the organizational meeting last week there were several in the room, they would have to file a request for assistance with FEMA.
All right. And you would have the contact for them if they don't have it.
It's just the FEMA website has it.
All right. I'll pass it on.
Good.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I have a question regarding outside contractors. How many outside contractors are we using?
Are we using?
Yes.
No, we've actually partnered with other South Carolina cities. We've helped them. They've chosen to help us up. The only contractor we've worked with is Garvin Oil with the 18-wheeler. We did hire Snyder Corporation. We had a donation from the Friends of Hopelands and Rye Patch. They sent tree climbers down to help us with the hangers that were up in the trees in Hopeland.
So We're not paying any outside contractors except Garvin. We've partnered with other cities.
Right.
The city, what are we reimbursing them?
FEMA has a reimbursement schedule, and the cities have all said that they're willing to accept the FEMA payment as payment in full. Now, we've provided them lodging, we've provided them meals, but we're going to get reimbursement from FEMA for that.
I saw some companies from Minnesota.
Yeah. There are dozens of companies in town.
Yeah, they go from place to place.
Right. They're helping private property owners.
Yeah. If we're getting 100% reimbursement, why wouldn't we hire contractors to help
us? That's what I'm wondering.
I've had that question several times. We have to live with what's left behind by the contractors. Our work with the contractors has shown some very serious concerns. I'm sure they're doing a fine job for the private property owners. Mr. DeWar shared that he had a real good experience. We have not. In fact, Public Services is doing a more efficient job picking up debris than they did in the 2004 storm. And they're just about done with the first pass through.
I don't know how you can say you've had a bad experience with the contractors at this time when we haven't even tried one. But
and again, what I'm talking about are the contractors that have worked outside of the bypass area in neighborhoods. We've had to go up and clean up behind their mess. We've had to do it.
I guess that's a contract management issue. My goodness, though. Surely somebody can go and talk to them. If they're clean doing a halfway job.
Of course, what we do have is staff doing an excellent job, and they're just about done with the first pass-through. We're going to get this done, but it was a 2 or 3 month proposition when we started. And again, in my discussions with Tim and with other staff, we're very comfortable with the progress we've made. We've had some folks that have stepped up, provided us land to store this debris. We have folks who are interested in purchasing the ground-up wood chips. So we're trying to march this as best we can, and we're picking it up a whole lot faster than we did 10 years ago. It's tough. I mean, believe me, I've talked to a lot of people about the piles of the house. We're getting it done. It's going to take us 3 passes. We're almost done with pass number 1. We are working on it.
And people have been patient with it, but those are the questions that I've been asked of the outside contractors. Who are we using? And do we expect to have any FEMA dollars remaining with using the outside, the cities, the partnership with the cities? Do we expect to spend all the FEMA funds?
And again, we have not met with our FEMA caseworker yet, so we're working on that answer.
We're in the July, August time frame to get back to normal schedule.
I'm not saying that.
Mr. Mayor, if you don't mind my asking for future appointments at the next meeting.
We didn't ask that. You're right.
Can I provide some, please?
We did not.
Sure. Right. And I've got something before we go also.
Sorry about that.
Okay. For the Planning Commission, and sir, I'll get this address to you later, but he's in the city. Charles Matthews is who I'm running. Terry Provo has elected not to to be nominated, recommended for the Planning Commission. So Charles Matthews is who I'm recommending for that, for city's consideration. For the Arts Commission, Joanne Saunders. For the Accommodations Tax Committee, Angela Key. And for the Senior Commission, Helen Simpkins.
I'm sorry, which commission?
Senior.
Senior Commission.
Yes, sir.
All right, and I've got something if we're on issues and updates. I wanted to talk about the meeting that we had the other day regarding the feasibility study that we're doing for the conference center downstairs below us. As we went through that conversation, we got a lot of real good feedback, but we kept bumping into the problem of limitations of the scope of work that had been assigned to the JLA company out of Augusta that was helping us. The general vibe that was coming out of that meeting was that there was a real question about the feasibility of that space as a conference center in general, or maybe the usefulness of that space as a conference center in general. And that was always, when I hear the word feasibility, that was always what I had in mind, was when we were going to do a feasibility study, we were going to look at what was feasible and what was best for that space. But anyway, that was what the conversation was during that meeting last Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And so what I wanted to do is have council consider the idea of broadening the scope of work that we've asked JLA for, so that we can discuss, rather than, you know, their scope as they specified it was that they were supposed to look at ways to change the floor plan.
And that's what we asked for.
That's exactly right.
Well, that may have been, you know, I'd have to go read the minutes to see if we specified that we want ways to change. Yes.
I asked for a copy of their contract, and I'm waiting to get it so I could see what their scope of work was.
We're pulling that. You'll have it.
Yeah. But the point is that, you know, if you were to take a vote of the people in that room that day, and granted this is not a scientific survey, but if you were to take a vote of the people in that room that day, I don't think you would have had anywhere near a majority in favor of even having it as a conference center at all. And so sit and limit them to drawing a new floor plan for something that maybe we need to talk about, you know, using it in a different fashion. You know, I think we're disrespecting their time and wasting some money to have them complete a floor plan like that. I'd like to broaden that scope of work so they can look at other potential for that space. If based on the information that came out there, if our intent is to have a facility that can hold up to 500 people, based on that information we heard, that was going to take a space of 9,000 square feet. And 9,000 square feet, as Mr. Ebner had said and others, is not doable in the space beneath us. It's almost not doable without totally disrupting this room in the process of doing anything. But, you know, 9,000 square feet isn't going to be possible downstairs. It's not going to be feasible. We can get a space that will hold 325 people instead of 315, you know, essentially no different than what we've got. And we'll find ourselves still in direct competition with other private enterprises here in Aiken. I think we ought to stop and look and broaden the scope so we can stop and look and see what is the best use of that space. And if we want to have a 500-seat or 500-person facility somewhere in Aiken, you know, what would be a recommendation for where that could go, how that could be done? You know, I don't think we should limit ourselves to a floor plan.
Well, why don't I get a quote from JLA to find out what that expense would be?
Well, and based on what we heard, honestly, I think we need another work session. We need to talk about it amongst ourselves, what we have expected. I mean, keep in mind, when we did the feasibility study, we all had expressed concerns about parking and what could go there and what. So we appropriated $10,000 to see what was likely to go there. We now know for sure that we can't put a 500-seat facility there, so I think we need to kind of regroup and say, okay, and take a look at the big picture. I had asked to sell the old Brinkley property, but Richard said, look, let's just kind of wait until we see what this study shows, but we need to open it up to the whole thing, because we own all that property. We need to say, ask ourselves what we can do it, what's the best use. I mean, I agree with you, it doesn't make any sense to spend over $1 million to get to add 20 people to the capacity.
Right. Yeah.
Mr. Mayor.
Well, I think we ought to also.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned that, and then the fact came out that it was what they were supposed to do, they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Looking at
that's true.
At that. But I also think we need to understand, it might be helpful in some way, about the use of it right now. I understand that it's open just about every weekend for something.
Mm-hmm.
And how valuable is that to us? Are we making money on that deal, or just what? You know, as it stands. But that's kind of aside to what you're talking about.
In the meantime, I agree with all that everybody said. But in the meantime, should we not ask JLA to postpone drawing floor plans until such time as we've had a follow-up meeting?
I'm not sure they're drawing floor plans as much as they're just determining a feasibility study. It's whatever council.
That's what
like
they said to us. That's what they said to me.
I think we should hold them up.
We just tell them to hold on until we've had a follow-up meeting on it. I mean, I hate to have them just sitting there spinning their wheels.
They would not want to do that.
No.
Okay. Right. I did want to mention, too, that we have a ribbon cutting Wednesday, April 9 at 12:30 at the new Splash Park at Citizens Park. We'd love for you to come, and if you could let me know if you'll be available.
What's the date again?
It's Wednesday, April 9 at 12:30 p.m.
At what time?
12:30 p.m. on April 9, a Wednesday.
Can we wear swimsuits?
Absolutely.
You said that.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
Two other things. One deals with Savannah Riverside and Mops. There's a potential for 1,600 jobs to be lost there. And time is moving very swiftly with that. We've seen the articles in the paper and the governor's comments recently on yesterday, Governor Hodges' comment. We had in our planning to support Savannah Riverside.
Right.
And I'm wondering whether a resolution is appropriate to get started to prepare to send to DOE regarding the exit strategy. If that is going to be halted, what's the exit strategy in terms of getting the waste out of this this community? I have an article to share with you and Richard first, where there is more weapons of grade plutonium that is targeted with Japan to come to here. And where would it come? That's Savannah Riverside. We're bringing in the waste, but we're not taking it out. So it's pretty serious right now with the concerns. So just want to propose that as a suggestion that we consider drafting a resolution regarding, I think Hodges' comments was right on target yesterday in terms of the agreement that was stated.
Oh, now, are you saying support what the governor's doing now?
Yes.
That. Or are you saying something else here about something that would say, hey, we don't want that?
This is different than I want to share with you, with more stuff coming in.
Okay.
That is being proposed. What I'm saying right now is what we have right now. If they shut down and put it in cold standby, we're stuck with this stuff. And if we're stuck with it, so be it. But we don't want to be stuck. We want it out of our state. We can't get funds to continue MOGS. Then give us an exit strategy as to how you plan to get it out of our...
Then don't we want to support what the governor is doing?
Yes.
The whole state?
Yes, yes.
Aiken delegation?
Yes, that is correct.
Well, okay.
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I understood what you wanted to support.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we should.
And we can get someone to help...
Certainly.
...to carve a resolution to see if this satisfied council with submitting to DOE in terms of the exit strategy for...
Could you do that?
Yes.
Get that done, and
yes,
then we can look at it. Anybody disagree with that?
No, right? Not at all.
That,
not at all.
We need to support it.
Yes.
Boy.
And lastly, I heard some sad news that Richard shared with us, and that is about Glenn. Glenn, I do not accept that. I did not receive that very well, but you have been an excellent leader, not a manager, but a leader, and we thank you. I'm saying this today, given my comments early on, that we don't know what tomorrow will bring. So I just want to share with you that my husband, when I told him what Richard had shared, he said, oh, my God, Glenn is the bread of the seniors. He cares about us. He takes his time and helps to educate us. So I just wanted to let you know that he expressed that last evening about you. So thank you.
Can we deny his retirement?
Yes.
He might have moved.
He's not old enough.
And I just want to thank the team of officers and city staff that was out at Kennedy Colony on March 15, providing the smoke alarms and the smoke detectors, or carbon monoxide detectors, for all of the residents in Kennedy Colony. Can all of you stand, those of you that was out there that Saturday, March 15th?
Who was out there?
Let's see,
Chad Cathcart's
right,
in the back
right.
Corner. That's Chad Cathcart.
And I think Chief Baranco, weren't you there?
No, he wasn't.
The conference.
Glenn, you were out there for a minute, and Sprawls was out there, but he's gone.
Sprawls left.
Well, Shane Mr. City Manager, because we talked about this. Go ahead.
I just wanted to let you know I was there Saturday morning and met the state fire marshal and talked with him about the program. It's a real honor that they would select us.
And the residents were very, very appreciative because they were riding back and asking, well, and the other people was riding around to see when they were going to get a grant.
There you go. We'd love to have
it. We're in trouble now.
When are we going to get it?
But I think it's very good service and will save a lot of lives.
Well, Tool Hill was the only area selected for this, these fire protectors. But
Kennedy Colony.
Because Betty's trying to figure out when they get it. I'm sorry, Betty, I meant Kennedy Colony. Richard, the other thing is, there are many folks that do not know that fire detectors should be replaced after 10 years. I talked to some folks in my building, and they said I wasn't aware. So we may want to put that in our newsletter. Is it in there?
Yep, it's in there. Yep, we sent that word out.
So I got educated that day, and I just thank y'all for doing this.
Anything else to come up?
All I have there.
If not,
thank you for that lesson.
You're welcome.
It is a great big task.
We have a beer.
I don't know. I
got up at 6:30. I was up in D.C. I had to go to a funeral. I flew back.